82 degrees outside. Good morning. This is John Williams. We had such a nice time just being outside for a couple of minutes yesterday and Saturday. We will play baseball games this spring in weather not this nice. But you know, the real one that was off the chain, I'm sure you guys remember, was Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, December 26th. Christmas Day. Producer Olive, I meant to look this up. I'm sorry I didn't. What was the high temperature in Chicago on Christmas Day? I have it in my head. This can't be true. It wasn't that long ago, but I have it in my head. It was 67 degrees. Was it 67 degrees?
I think it was close to 67.
Which is just crazy, but this weekend was really nice.
I played golf on December 26th.
Griff and I played tennis Christmas Day and with, you know, short sleeves. But this was a nice weekend, too, and then maybe 4 to 10 inches of snow coming. But every day we get a little more daylight, and the days get a little bit longer, and I'll take all of that. I just want to find that fact. I'll get that for you in just a second. I want to play for you, not all of, but just a segment of what Anderson Cooper and Rod Blagojevich went through. And I thought it was interesting what Robert Feeder, the media writer, said about Marquee Sports' debut over the weekend. Lots of numbers to cover here before the 9:30 news. By the way, it's 40 degrees outside. It feels so much warmer than that to me. But this weekend, it was crazy warm. And I said I remembered Christmas, it was 67. Producer Aleph looked it up. What was the high temperature Christmas Day, please?
57 degrees, John.
Missed it by that much. It wasn't 67, it was 57. What about the next day, December 26th, Producer Aleph?
61.
Getting there. 61. 57 and 61.
That's the day I played golf. It was 61. But it didn't feel like, actually, it was like, felt like it was in the 50s.
Yeah. And I remember I was mad because I drove to northern Wisconsin that day and it dropped about 30 degrees.
You know what you hated? Yeah, Brenda and I are taking a trip in March to a warm place, and I know while we're gone, it'll be 67 here and sunny.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I won't begrudge you that. If you can get it, get it.
But doesn't everybody always say that the day before the blizzard of 67, it was 70 degrees or something?
Producer Aleph.
Sorry, Producer Aleph.
She just looked at me like, really? This bit is so old. What was the high temperature the day before the blizzard of 67? Because then it says it was 83 degrees.
I did not say that.
But before we get to all of that, listen to this. This is just a clip. This is just a few seconds from Rod Blagojevich's bad idea, go on CNN with Anderson Cooper. And you know that you're backpedaling. You know that you should not have gone on CNN with Anderson Cooper when your answer to one of the questions is this. That was him loading up. That was him kind of jockeying for position. Just play that one more time, Aleph. I didn't fix that. That was him literally just going, and I don't know if he thought Anderson was going to be nice to him, or Blagojevich isn't bad. He can handle himself verbally in just about any arena, even if a judge and jury doesn't agree with his shtick. He certainly can lob the words. This was just the one clip I'll play for you now, and it's where that stammer occurs. It's Blago on the ropes.
Since you've been out, in the statements you've made, you've shown no remorse for the crimes that you were convicted by a jury of, and you're portraying yourself as a victim of persecution by prosecutors. Just about everyone, though, who's actually looked at the evidence against you says that that's just false.
Well, I don't think they've looked carefully, because I am a political prisoner. I was put in prison for practicing.
Wait a minute, you're a political prisoner? See, Nelson Mandela was a political prisoner. Political prisoners have no due process and are unjustly jailed. You had a jury convict you. You had appeals courts look at your sentencing, and you even appealed to the Supreme Court twice, and they refused to hear you. So you're hardly a political prisoner.
Well, first of all, Nelson Mandela went to before a court. He was convicted in a court of law.
By a racist apartheid government.
I bet you if you were to ask Nelson Mandela whether he thought the process was fair back in the early 60s in South Africa,
he would say something or another. He was just, now he's just throwing punches. Blago with a left, with a right. He's just stammering and throwing punches blindly. Maybe one of them will land. And of course, that interview ends with each of them saying a word we can't say on the radio. But that was one of the noteworthy conversations over the weekend, I will say that. Bob Feeder, the media writer in Chicago, wrote this today. The Chicago Cubs and Sinclair Broadcast Group had more than a year to get their act together to launch Marquee Sports Network. Even so, Saturday's long-awaited debut turned out to be the worst new product launch in memory. Still without Comcast Xfinity, the region's largest cable provider, it only got worse from there. Hulu Plus Live TV, touted as a streaming alternative for cable cord cutters, pushed back its start date for Marquee to perhaps opening day, March 26. Also left in the dark were countless Charter, Spectrum, and DirecTV customers. Others had no idea where to find Marquee, thanks to the network's inadequate marketing efforts. Remember when Cubs boss man Tom Ricketts got roundly booed on stage at the mere mention of Marquee during last month's Cubs convention? Feeder writes, he says those boos just got louder.
What our promise for the next 10 years is to continue to have the best relationship with our fans of any sport in the world, any professional sports team in the world. And that starts with the Marquee Network. The Marquee Network. What do you have against the Marquee Network? Believe me, you won't be booing about that in a year.
You'll be booing about it in a month is what you'll be
booing. You won't be booing about the Marquee Network in 1 year.
Yeah, but 4 weeks later they are. The market is off 750 points this morning. What's going on? Is that still the virus? Orion Samuelson's been looking at this. Is that Corona or trade? Oh, can you shed a little light on this?
Well, my light on it, first of all, the markets, I don't care if they're agriculture or Wall Street, don't like uncertainty. And we are certainly looking at uncertainty with the pandemic that's now being threatened. And as you take a look at the opening this morning and the weekend, S&P 500 down more than 3%, Dow down more than 800, because investors are looking at safe haven assets after the surge in coronavirus cases outside China, because the count certainly climbed over the weekend. Cases in Iran, Italy, South Korea added to fears of a pandemic. That sent safe haven places like gold to a seven-year high. U.S. Treasuries surged, pushing the 10-year yield to the lowest since July of 2017, while the investors, the inversion between the three-month and the 10-year yields deepened. That's a classic sign of recession. So the uncertainty of what this disease or pandemic is doing and can do continues to impact the markets. Warren Buffett, of course, who gets asked a lot of questions about the markets, this morning had this to say. He said that the coronavirus outbreak is scary stuff, but said it was no time to sell stocks despite the threat of a pandemic. And he said investors, particularly with the 10 to 20-year time horizon and focused on companies' earnings power, will do well in the stock market, and the outbreak has not changed his long-term outlook. And so that's some of the reaction, but we're seeing it on Wall Street, because when you take a look at what the market opened at this morning and is continuing to trade in the red, it's not showing much of a bounce back. Let me take a quick look. Dow Industrial Average down 797 points, and the S&P 500 down 90 at the moment. The NASDAQ down 272 at the moment. And then there's the volatility index, VIX, at the CBOE that we quote every day. That's the worry factor in the investment stock market. And when that goes up, you know there's a lot of worry and concern on the part of traders. And right now it's up 5.25 points for the morning. And that's unusually high. If it moves a quarter of a point, it's kind of unusual. But now it's up 5 points. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because you say Warren Buffett says if your horizon is 10 to 20 years,
yep.
I'd like to think we'd get our hands on this thing sooner. And I know the market's due for a correction anyway. But my optimism, Orion, would be that
we've had things like this before. More people are still far more infected and affected by the flu than right. coronavirus. So we'll get a handle on this. And if this is an 800-point drop because of that, I would imagine we would recover that just because medicine and science and the virus will run its course. But I also heard you say the R word. And so I'm wondering if the uncertainty isn't just about the coronavirus, but about some other factors as well.
Well, you brought back the thought that the market is due for a correction, but you never know when it's coming, and you never know how big a correction it'll be. But I'm not a big stock trader, but I do have a rule. I would never sell on a day like today when the market is down 804 yeah. points on yeah. the Dow, because tomorrow those investors are going to take a look at some of the prices on stocks that they want or that they like, and they're going to take advantage of the low prices today, and they're going to probably buy tomorrow.
Well, that's what I'm going to do. I don't have any money, but that's what I would right. do. If you just spot me, I don't know, $100,000 or in or whatever it is that these people have, I think I'll go in and buy something or another and whistle Dixie tomorrow. I don't know.
Well, we see it time and again when you get a big sell-off in a day or 2 days, you very soon will find bargain hunters coming into the market to say, hey, that Apple stock looks pretty good. By the way, Apple today, Supreme Court failed to hear their situation on a patent dispute that they currently have. And 400, did I see 400?
Just looking at what it's trading at. By the way, I see the Dow is off 818, 819 right now. So it's not bouncing back in the early hours, that's for sure.
No, and it probably won't bounce back a great deal today, but I would guess there'll be a bounce back tomorrow.
Nice to hear your voice, my friend. We'll visit with you later. If something else happens remarkable in the market this morning, I'll give you a call.
Okay, I'll be ready.
That's WGN Radio's Orion Samuelson. This family in Lockport, they're picking up another radio station in their daughter's wall.
Yeah, it's not uncommon. If you've got enough RF energy in the air and you've got dissimilar metals and you've got some galvanic action happening, you can receive things.
I was going to say that.
How we first discovered it, our daughter woke up the next morning and said, I heard voices last night, and my wife and I looked at each other like, what?
I love Meryl Streep in the flick, one true thing, I love traffic.
It's one of the more popular replays over the weekend at WGNradio.com was the conversation with that Lockport family. The dad was telling us about how his daughter gets a radio station in the walls. So our chief engineer, who loves to talk engineering, he loves to say galvanic response and divergent metals and frequency and, I don't know, engineering stuff. And then he just kind of looks at you like, you don't even know what I just said. And he's a delightful guy. And he can fix anything, some things that aren't even broken. So that's our Bill Murdoch. And that was him kind of waxing wise about it. But here literally was the sound. Which one will this be, the music or the talking? This will be the talking. Okay, so this is the sound coming from the daughter's bedroom wall. He said sometimes it's so loud it wakes him up in the other room. He literally like comes in and goes, what is that? And it's the wiring in the walls is acting like a speaker. They've cut into the walls. They can't fix it. Nice family, nice guy. And our Bill Murdoch actually volunteered to give him more help than he's been getting. It's not the FCC's problem. It's not that other radio station's problem. It's his problem. And they've been living with that for 6 years. And it still happens. So I don't know what you do about that. We're trying to get him to at least tune it to WGN Radio, but that hasn't happened yet. By the way, it seems like I pick on Xfinity and the Cubs more than I should, right? I mean, if somebody can make a buck and we can all enjoy a service, why should I denigrate that? But it just seems like I've been piling on lately. And I think if they are doing badly or charging people too much, they deserve to be criticized. And if it's something you want to pay for, it's none of my business. Help yourself.
I did watch it Saturday. And, I thought there were some positives in there. I thought they're trying to be innovative. When you try to do that, John, not everything always comes off without a hitch.
Don't we know that here? Hey, right? John, it says here, I watched the spring training Saturday on the Marquee Network, and I loved it. And this one says, as long as Comcast Xfinity does not carry the Cubs games, they don't have a deal with Marquee, it gives me an excuse to go to the bars and watch the Cubs. And I'm a Sox fan, but thank you, Marquee, for getting me out of the house and away from my wife and kids. So there's two positive reviews for Marquee right there. It's 9:43. I want to talk about this, but I need your help because this has not happened to me, but maybe it's happened to you. You get on the plane. You have tickets. You have tickets for your kids. They don't let you sit together. What happens? And there's a change.org petition to get airlines to actually change their rules about this. But I want to know what your experience is. 312-981-7200. Yeah, I'm sorry. We all here's what happens. People in the media, Neil Steinberg actually wrote about this. He said, I know you're tired of the Rod Blagojevich stuff, to say nothing of Jussie Smollett. I'm tired of it. My editor asked me if I wanted to write about it, and Steinberg said, I said no. And then my wife said, all my friends want to see, where's your column about Rod Blagojevich? So he wrote a column about Rod Blagojevich, saying that we shouldn't pay any attention to Rod Blagojevich, which is kind of ironic, but I'm guilty of the same thing. I think we all say, I don't want to hear about it. Hey, did you hear about Jussie Smollett? And now we've got, it's as if one of those kinds of stories wasn't bad enough, now we have two. Change.org has this petition, Families Fly Together. Brenda and I have flown with our sons for years. We don't fly a lot. My sons are a little older now, so it's not an issue. But this woman named Michelle Klatt started a petition. Airlines have poor practices of seating families on planes. Often parents are separated from children, even children as young as 2 years old. Paying for seat assignments is not a guarantee that parents will be seated next to their child. There's no law saying they have to do that, and airlines can change at any time. Twice, she writes, in 8 months, I have been separated from my son. Both times I paid extra so that I could choose seats together for our young family on two separate flights on two different airlines, both with itineraries that had originally included seats together. I was separated from my toddler. It's a family of three, so I guess a husband and wife, and their two-year-old son. And they said, well, don't worry, we'll be able to put you together. Then they got on there and said, actually, there's no room. Your kid's in that row, 2 years old, and you are in this row, and that's the way it's going to be. I don't understand any of this. On Southwest, of course, y'all just find the seats you can. Otherwise, you have assigned seats, and you sit in your assigned seat. And sometimes somebody will say to you, hey, I couldn't get a ticket next to my kid or my spouse. Will you help me out? And then you do or don't. But I don't understand the confusion. And I also just wonder what happens when somebody comes up to you. Say you're sitting next to the two-year-old. Of course, you're going to accommodate that family, right? So I'm a little mystified by what's going on out there, and I'm asking you to tell me.
It's another way for the airlines to get more money on tickets.
Hey, Steve Bertrand.
Hey, John Williams. So what they're doing is they're selling economy fares that lure you in.
Yeah.
And then a lot of times it's check-in at the airport.
Like. Yeah.
And so you don't have any say in where you're seated.
And this isn't Southwest we're talking about.
No. No.
Really? So like on American or Delta or Icelandic Air in this one lady's case?
Well, I've got a group going to, private group of, I think, eight people going to Ireland. And, you know, we bought them economy tickets. But then for them to choose their own seats and to make sure they're sitting together, they've got to go online and pay another $35 a person.
That's interesting. I had no idea. But then I wonder what happens in the plane then. Say you're separated and you're a couple of 50-year-olds. Maybe you grin and bear it. But if there's a person with a disability or a frail senior or a nervous person or a child, I'm just thinking of all of the kinds of people that you might be tapped on the shoulder about and say, hey, could you help us out here? If it's a two-year-old, you don't want to sit next to a two-year-old. That's crazy talk. So
you're saying a parent comes to you and says, you know what? They put me next to my two-year-old. He's going to cry all the way till we get there. Will you sit here so I can sit back and relax?
I mean, really. So I guess, say Brenda and I are sitting next to each other, and next to us is the two-year-old. The parent comes up to us and says, can you help us out? We will either go sit where they're sitting so they can sit next to their two-year-old, even if that means we're separated, or we would let somebody else sit there and they take the two-year-old and we keep our seats. I mean, I don't know how that works, but it just seems to me like whatever the question is, the answer has to be yes. How is it not? Well, let's talk to Rose. Hey, Rose, you're on WGN. What happened to you?
Oh, okay, John. Do I have to turn my radio off?
You sound good, but okay. Yes, if you can. But go ahead and tell me what happened.
Okay. Okay. This is quite a few years ago. We were going to Florida, my daughter and her two children. One was like maybe 5 months old, and the other one was 2 years old. Okay. Well, I guess we assumed at the time, this was like 10, 15 years ago, we assumed that we would be seated together. But we weren't. The baby bawled her brains out. I was standing up, holding it, rocking the baby, and the baby quieted down. But the elderly gentleman that was sitting in the seat that I was supposed to, thought was to sit in, spoke no English, and he would not move. I talked to the flight attendant, and she said, well, he won't move. So here I am standing, holding the baby, rocking it. And then the flight attendants let me do this, but I had to do this for like 3 hours.
Yeah.
I only had to sit down when the plane descended.
What should happen in a situation like that? So they say, hey, look, you see the deal here.
Because
that
know.
Guy paid for that pay? Seat, so I maybe no, by rights it's his seat, but...
I just assumed that we, you know, maybe it changed now, but I would have paid the extra to sit by my, you know, my grandson and the baby so she could sit in with the mother.
Yeah, no, I get it. I get it. Rose, thanks for the call. Sorry about that. Jim wanted to say something about that. Rose, I'm going to go from you to him. Hey, Jim, you're on WGN. What happens?
Morning, John. I fly every single week, and this situation that you're describing with this petition, it has to be a really unusual situation, if it's what the person says, where they had booked seats, they had assigned seats, they had paid extra for them, and then the airline had moved them. Like, unless there was a flight cancellation and they changed equipment, it would just be really unusual for the airline to take that step. Again, I'm on a plane every single week, 120 flights last year.
Wow.
I just don't think this happens very often.
I'm glad to hear that. Jim, thanks for the call and thanks for listening. I'm going to go from you to Jim on line two. Hey, Jim, what's your observation about all of that?
Yeah, John, it basically amounts to the other passengers on the plane being just plain rude when they see a situation like that and not helping out their colleagues or their other passengers on the plane.
Yeah.
When they see that a family's been divided up and nobody offers to help out, and this happens quite frequently. And then on another point, I was on an airplane once that was two-thirds full, and they had my wife and I five rows apart, and well, in that case, we just flat out moved.
Yeah.
But that's the kind of stuff that goes on.
I'm sorry to hear that, Jim. I'm going to go from you to Dan, who says he flies every week. Is that right, Dan? You're on the air. Hi.
Yes. Hi, John. Thank you. Yes, I do fly every week on United Airlines for business. Good news, not flying this week, so I'm dodging the snowstorm. But I see it a little bit differently. I often see folks shifting around and allowing elderly couples to sit and sometimes families to sit. But the fact is, if you buy regular coach tickets,
yeah,
you're able to book your seats when you buy your seats. I always fly coach, and I get my seats when I book. It's when you go the Super Saver route that you're not able to book until you arrive at the airport, and that's what happens when the big family comes in with five people, that they're often split around.
That's
and
what Bertrand was talking about, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. Sometimes that's just the nature of the game. But, you know, the airlines really do try. And I've seen United flight attendants asking people to try to shift around, especially when it's a very young child needing to be with a parent
or
an elderly couple together.
What this story doesn't say, Dan, is that she – so you're telling me that she probably could have been guaranteed a seat with her kid if she didn't go the Super Saver route. And if you do that with a two-year-old, you've got to expect that this is on you. Then it's not on the airline, it's on the parent, right?
That's correct. I think there's a responsibility on both sides. You know, if you really want to have that peace of mind and that comfort, you got to pay a few extra bucks more for the ticket. You know, it's not earth-shattering. It's a few bucks more, but, you know, it's a matter of having that peace of mind and the quality of life to be able to fly with your family like
that.
Yeah,
but it's not unreasonable when you buy a ticket to be able to see what seats are available and to pick your seats.
You know,
but, well, a lot of times when you buy a ticket now, you can't choose your seats. You have to pay extra to choose your seat.
Yeah.
So if you don't want to sit in the middle, you know, they're dinging you for another $35-$50.
Which is okay, but I'm just wondering which is the chicken and which is the egg. That is, was the original rate the one where you were picking your seat and they're giving you a discount, or are they actually charging you more for something that should be basic? Like,
well, they're probably trying to advertise lower fares.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And then making it up by charging you $50 for a bag and things like that.
By the way, this caller, Dan, does he sound like Steve Grzanich to you? Would you just do me a favor, Dan? Say the markets are off 800 points today.
Well, you know what, John? The markets are off 800 points today. But don't worry, they're going to bounce back within 3 days, I promise you.
I can hear it.
Don't you guys? Am I the only one? As soon as he called in, I thought, this is Steve Grzanich. I don't know if you've thought about a job in news at a big-time radio station, Dan, but you've got the chops.
Steve is one of my heroes. I listen to you guys every day, so it's always a pleasure to be there.
Thanks for the phone call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
He's actually, even as he said that, he sounded more and more like Steve Grzanich, which is not a bad thing. Irene, you paid how much to reschedule your flight?
$225 for three tickets. And then when the flight that I was supposed to go on was late, like almost 2 hours, I wanted a refund back because I paid for something I didn't get.
Well, you were eventually able to get on that plane, weren't you?
I was, but the point is that I did it because I had to delay the flight. And I'm saying they themselves delayed their flight. I had to pay. They did nothing.
Yeah, I can't help you on that one. But that's what is the thanks for the call, Irene. I saw a number, the amount of dollars that the airline industry has made last year. They're doing very well. I don't want to brag. It's 10:08 on WGN Radio. Actually, I do want to brag just a little bit. Everybody, everybody.
Handyman. Handyman does what Lou Manfredini can. Fixes tubes in a flash. Guess who just saved some cash? Hey there, here goes the handyman. Is he strong? Listen, bub. He's got liquid plumber blood. Here he comes, a hammering. He can duct tape anything. Hey there, here comes the handyman.
I think if Lou Manfredini were listening right now, he'd be very proud of me.
What is it?
Well, Brenda wanted an extra shelf above the shelf in her closet. So you open up the closet, and then you've got the shelf up there where there's shoe boxes and stuff. And there's a lot of room way up there. So we could pile stuff way up there, but it would probably be better if way up there there was another shelf to kind of hold stuff and not put too much weight on the first shelf.
Make it easier to get to the stuff on the first shelf.
Wow, is that a difficult space to get into? And then you get these wire rack systems with... You got to get them level, and then you've got to get the support bars underneath to hold them up. And it's just a job. And I don't think that I did it, air quotes now, correctly, but I know that that thing is not going anywhere anytime soon.
Did you use anchors?
I did use anchors for the screws to hold into the mortar.
Drywall?
The drywall.
Mortar.
Better.
Some people call it mortar.
And I put, and they recommended you have three. I put like seven.
Nice.
So I'm just bam, bam, bam. So I'm very solid and remarkably level.
Did you hang from it? Because that's the test. You should go home and hang from it.
I did not.
Oh.
But I don't know if you've got anything in your hand of.
Well, I was scaling the cliffs of Malibu this weekend, so thanks for taking on the competition while I was out of town.
So you really can't play handyman poker today,
no,
can you? I win.
Flew home. I flew a plane home. Sat in row 20A.
I built an airplane, man. That was that was some engineering. I had the drill going and tools.
Can I say something about L.A.?
Sure.
It was very, it's very, you know, you've been talking, I think, about the memorial service for Kobe Bryant. Coming up today.
Dave and I were talking about it.
It's amazing. To not have the personal association and then to go into a city where it is.
Oh, really?
And he's everywhere.
I mean,
Walking up and down Venice Beach, the street artists are painting Kobe Bryant. There are billboards around. There are storefronts. It's Kobe Bryant everywhere.
I'm I'm so sorry for what happened to those people and to his family. I'm a little surprised that there's still an appetite for another Kobe Bryant memorial and that this is the big one. I mean, wasn't the NBA All-Star Weekend a tribute to Kobe Bryant? They've already had the funeral. It just seems to me like I didn't think they'd be able to sell tickets. This is a ticketed event. It's at the Staples Center. And so I guess the Kobe Bryant tributes will continue. That's, did you say today, Steve?
I think David maybe know more, but I think it's today, yeah.
Well, anyway, when I was in Minneapolis, actually, we were living in Minneapolis when Prince died, but as I recall, we shortly thereafter went to Paris on one of our trips with listeners. And even in Paris, people were honoring Prince. But boy, did that resonate in Minneapolis. If you were in the Twin Cities, it was everywhere. Maybe the way, I don't know that we have an equivalent here, Walter Payton's passing was in Chicago.
Didn't they light the Eiffel Tower in purple?
They did.
When you were
they
there?
Did. Yeah. They bathed it in purple lights. It was really amazing.
And the memorial is today because it's 224, and those are their numbers. That was Gianna's number and his number.
How about that? How about that? I mean, the way they've been able to sync their numbers with the All-Star Game scoring, the fact that players would let the clock run out on certain possessions to start games after Kobe died, it's something, isn't it? Did you see the story? I don't know that this is the same as, say, a scene from Risky Business, or what was the example you were thinking of, Elif? There's a movie that you said, what happened to that Airbnb in Naperville reminded you of where?
Well, the one that I thought of first was Mean Girls, and also 10 Things I Hate About You has a similar scene.
All right, let's hear your clip on this one.
Okay, so I got enough cheese and crackers for 8 people. Do you think that's enough?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was not enough. Somehow the word had gotten out about my small get-together.
Jason is here with Taylor Waddell.
Yeah, you get the idea.
Do I know you?
See, what up, dog?
Do I know you? There's the party. There's the party. So they have this Airbnb in Naperville in a very nice, exclusive neighborhood where the houses are called estates. And what it sounds like is there's this one couple, they bought a house. And then they don't live there, though. It's 7,000 square feet. It's an estate. And it's worth $1.5 million or something like that. And it would be a great place to have a little mini retreat. Or if a wealthy family was going to come in and they knew their manners, they could have it. If a group of 10 cancer survivors were going to all get together and wanted a nice house to recollect their battles, which is how it has been used, then this would be kind of a house for that. You all chip in and you pay for it. So the family that owns it doesn't live there, but another guy leases it out as a business proposition. I don't know how you feel about that if that's in your neighborhood, even if everybody's well-behaved. But I guess that's what's happening. And so in this instance, 150 people show up for a monster party. Prior to this, says Suzanne Baker in the Chicago Tribune, the most public abuse of a short-term rental property occurred last year at a home on North Ellsworth Street. Residents on that block complained at a council meeting about an out-of-control New Year's party.
But now, the couple that, you know, they rent it out to, they let this one guy lease it, he rents it out to somebody. They did not say in the story who the people were that threw the party, but it was a monster party. The police showed up and were there for 4 hours. While the cops are there, people are still arriving at the party. And it seems to me like if I come to a party, I don't know these people, but I heard there was a party, I show up, and the cops are there, I go, we'll go somewhere else. But no, people are like, no, we're coming in. We're coming to this party. They kept coming and they didn't want to leave. I guess only one citation was written, but it was out of control. Cars lined up and down the street, the noise, went to the early hours of the next day. The weekend The home is, this weekend, the home is booked by a group of people celebrating 10 years of being cancer-free. Last week, it was rented by people involved in the NBA All-Star Game. The guy that rents it out says, my brand means a lot to me, and I'm embarrassed by this. They have video cameras. They're able to see when too many people show up. So when they get there, they still couldn't disperse the crowd. But here's the interesting thing. At the city council, they said, okay, well, the property owner needs to be hit economically to prevent situations like this. But the guy that leased it out said that the Airbnb renter should be the one to be punished. So the guy that threw the party is the one that they should fine $1,000 or whatever they want to fine him. The city council said maybe we ought to fine the people that are actually renting it out to the likes of that person. The place has a $6,000 a month mortgage. Just reading, $1.5 million estate to become a party house. It's also not in the... Oh, yeah, and they say that it's nobody benefits if it's discovered that this is a party house, because then the neighbors will likely shut it down, or the village will, and because legitimate users won't want to use that place. I suppose you could make it a party house, but the neighborhood would have nothing to do with that. I'm just wondering if... Has that happened in your neighborhood, or has that happened to you? The Airbnb version is one. The one that I think most of us are familiar with is not that version. It's the risky business version. The parents leave town, and then the kids just throw a party. I've been to those kinds of parties. I'm just wondering what your experience was, and has this happened in your neighborhood? My number is 312-981-7200. I thought about, because we have a place that's not that far from Wrigley Field, and I said to Brenda, you know, we could take a weekend, and then we could let people come in here, and they could have a Cubs weekend, and then they could have our place, and, you know, our snacks, I don't know how this works, and then we would get some money. We could maybe in a weekend make our mortgage payment. She's less enthusiastic about that than I am.
You'd have a lot to of secure everything, you'd have to... pay to have it cleaned up, or clean it up yourself afterward and before.
You have to have a spare refrigerator so you can put all your stuff in there, lock it up.
Really?
You have to have a spare liquor cabinet so you can put all your stuff so they don't invade that. It's a lot of things, yeah. My sister rents houses. I mean, she has a house that she rents.
And
oh, my gosh.
Okay, wait a minute.
The stories she has are awesome.
Hold on a second. Elif said, we got to take a break now. Elif, we got two, so I got to take a break now. Okay. No, we just got one. We can keep going? Okay. Well, then we'll keep going. So she rents it out. Generally, though, I presume she has good experiences, right? And is the idea, Mary, that you want to make your rent, right? I mean, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, and hers pays for her taxes. She uses it for that. She uses it for, you know. And then the hardest part is you have to find people to clean the house. And hers is in northern Wisconsin. You have to find people to clean. Otherwise, you have to go up there all the time
and do
all the sheets. And, you know, and she's done that a lot. And it's a pretty big place. But you have to know who to rent. And she likes to rent to the same people year after year.
Yeah, I guess if you had regular customers, that would be
nice. Then it works okay.
But. So it's a second home for her.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. See, in my case, I'm thinking, no, we would go stay at an Airbnb. We'd go stay in a motel. We'd go stay somewhere for the weekend and then let people come in and trash our house.
So you would open up your house as an Airbnb and go stay at an Airbnb while you were
switch them out. Yeah, a lot of people actually switch.
If I could, hopefully the math works out on this, Steve. Otherwise, you're right. I know it's a bad plan.
We used to have a house in Saugatuck a long time ago, and it's a vacation home or second home. So we would rent. We rented it just a few times. And, you know, one time a woman, even though it said no pets, brought a cat, and there was cat hair all over the place.
Really?
Another time there was a limit on people, and they actually overwhelmed our septic system.
Now, my sister said that with dirty diapers everywhere.
Oh,
you
no.
know, garbage
people.
Is over.
People,
overstretch, yeah.
Come on.
Oh, yeah.
Kathy, you go first. Lots of calls about this. Go figure. You're on WGN. Hi, Kathy. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
Talk to me.
Well, I was telling your producer, I have kind of a different twist on this. My son and his four friends rented a place up when they were going to college up in Ely, having a party one Saturday night. And, of course, you know, everybody that knew about the party came. They didn't know people. There's 75 people in the house, and the police showed up, you know, Deputy Fife shows up, and the four guys that rented the house, they were all hiding underneath their beds because they started ticketing everybody for underage drinking.
Yeah.
At the tune of, you know, $125 a kid. Well, the cops got smart and they said, well, where are the four guys that rent this place? And everybody was like, well, we don't know. And he said, they show their faces or I'm going to start ticketing every one of you for trespassing.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because otherwise you have no right to be here.
Exactly. So, I mean, they've graduated, they've moved on, but I've always wanted to go back up to that police department and say, how much money did you get off of these boys in the 4 years that they lived in that house? Because any time there was a party, the police were there ticketing. So,
well, whose side are you on in the telling of this story? The cops should have given them a break once in a while?
Oh, I don't know. It's hard, you know. I don't know. Hard to say what I did 40 years ago in college compared to what they do now, but we have our Airbnb stories to tell too, so
yeah, I'll bet.
A little bit different.
Thanks for the phone call, Kathy.
Okay, enjoying the line.
Yeah, I'm enjoying the calls. Lots of conversation about this, lots of texts too. Earl wanted to say something. Hey, Earl, this is John. You're on the air.
Hey, hi, John. I heard your story there. I'm an Airbnb host, and we got scammed by a young lady New Year's Eve. She didn't show up till about 11 o'clock, and my son, who lived next door, said, hey, Dad, your guest is here. She's either drunk or stupid because she couldn't find out to get in the place.
Huh.
I said, well, let's just hope she's drunk and she's going to sleep it off. He texted me 2 minutes later and said, you better call the sheriff. There's 10 more cars parked over there right now. This is a little place in the country that people come to get away from everything. A little two-bedroom house, no smoking, no parties. We ended up with 60 people in the house and 25 or 30 cars parked outside.
Yeah.
So does Airbnb then help you go after those people, or are you kind of on your own?
I was on the phone with Airbnb and got moved up to their critical response level, and I was talking to their local county sheriff at the same time. Trying to put an end to this. Airbnb made everything right. There was quite a bit of damage. They took care of that. I had to go through the procedures to give evidence of what was lost and get estimates for repairs.
Well, do they have the credit card numbers, though, the people that rent the place out? It would just seem to me like it's like this Naperville thing. It's not like this is a mystery who was there. It seems to me if you had their credit card, they can damage the place all they want. They're going to pay the contractors.
Well, Airbnb tends to take the side of the guests in disputes or in problems.
Oh.
I didn't go to bed until 3 a.m. New Year's Eve. Cleaning up the place, airing out the smoke, making sure, you know, enough. Anyway, by the time I got in bed at 3 a.m., she had a refund from Airbnb.
Wow.
Claimed the property wasn't available on the date she wanted. And the local police were of no help at all. As far as they were concerned, it was a civil matter and not a criminal matter. They were not going to enforce anything, any claim of trespassing. They said if the people in there, the kids are drunk or they're on drugs, they've got no business driving. They're just going to have to spend the night in your property. 60 kids in a little two-bedroom apartment area.
Kids, like what age are you talking here?
I think most of them were late teens, early 20s.
Wow. It's, you know, once upon a time, the kids would get hotel rooms or motel rooms and party that way. But now an Airbnb outside of the supervision of a hotel staff does seem like
a friend of mine who's very savvy on Facebook found this young lady. She had a different name on Facebook, but we went back and she said, booked an Airbnb party New Year's Eve, hit me up for info. And we saw another post on one of her friend's wall that said Apple Pay only. So I think she was charging people in advance before they showed up.
Well, I went to parties like that once upon a time, too. But, I mean, not to sound like a boomer here, but, I mean, if that's under 21, I don't know if the parents of that kid say, hey, we saw on Facebook that you're throwing a party at an Airbnb, how that goes, you know?
Well, on Airbnb, when you accept a booking,
you don't know anything. You don't see the pictures. You don't know much about them except their first name.
Yeah.
Okay? And I'll keep her first name out of it. But once the picture was revealed, she was a minority member, and she had tattoos, and the picture was scary. Okay? So that's why I had my son keep an alert for, you know, when the guest arrived. I didn't cancel it. I was very hospitable. She wanted to book it.
Yeah.
She wanted to book the place because she wanted to visit with her parents and her grandma New Year's Eve. a nice quiet evening. I didn't see anybody that came close to looking like her grandma.
I'm out of time.
We were just lucky to get him out of there in 2 hours.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
Have a good day, Earl. Cautionary tales stemming from that story out of Naperville. More calls still about this and experiences. Plus, what's the latest on this forecast? We'll get you maybe a more extended look at the storm that's coming by this time tomorrow. This is sounding less and less like a good idea, me renting out my place, Steve, before a Cubs game to some folks. And I just imagine people sitting around reading magazines, having coffee, discussing the lineup changes that maybe David Ross is going to engage in. Then they go to the game. Then they come back. Whoo, boy, are they tired. They go to bed early, leave the next day.
Yeah, that's usually what happens around Wrigley Field, especially if you're spending up so you can stay there and not have to drive home after the game.
See, we have listeners all around. Some of you are listening to us today in Los Angeles. 818, I live in Los Angeles. I am so tired of Kobe news. It is news every day. It's usually the top story out here. But another caller, listener, said, John, if Jordan died tragically, Chicago would shut down too. And I think they may have a point there. John, my daughter lives in Lincoln Park. This is about Airbnbs getting rented out and the craziness that happens. There's a story in the news today of what happened in Naperville. Fancy place, million-plus estate. Some folks are supposed to show up and use it responsibly, and instead there was 150 people trashing the joint. It was a wild party. John, my daughter lives in Lincoln Park. The house next door to her, big parties. Neighbors call the police, tons of young people, too many people, small apartment, wild and drunk. And about air travel, we talked a little while ago about the story of a woman whose two-year-old was not allowed to sit with her. She evidently booked the Super Saver fares, and she wasn't able to get a seat next to her two-year-old. The airline wouldn't accommodate her when she got on the plane. It sounds like nobody else would either. She was upset, and now she has a petition from Change.org to the United States Congress asking them to make it the law that you can't separate families on airplanes. And I suppose you could put an age restriction on that, but I don't know if that's reasonable, since if you want to pay a little more, you can guarantee a seat. So maybe what this woman was doing was trying to get lucky and hope that she'd get a seat next to her child. But if the kid's 2 years old, I also think this is manageable on the plane. Somebody would step up and help out, right?
Well, okay, people keep saying that, and I'm all for being nice generally. But if I wanted a window seat, and I chose my window seat, and then I see this family in this situation, and my choice is to get up and go sit in the middle of a four row seat or
don't
something.
Don't finish this sentence, Steve.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm not. I'm going to be less inclined to do that.
I wouldn't have said that.
Well, it's the truth. I would sit low in my chair and wait for anyone else to volunteer, and then when they failed, I'd scooch a little lower.
Last time I saw such a damaging or heard such a damaging confession on this radio show was when restaurant critic Phil Vitale was on our show last week. Wednesday it was, and Phil was sitting here telling about how he was sitting at a restaurant table. It was the bench seating on either side. You know, you got a bunch of people on one side, mm-hmm. a bunch of people on the other side, and the seats were so squished together that he reached down to wipe his fingers because they were dirty with greasy barbecue sauce or whatever, and realized that he was using the woman's cashmere scarf next to him. It wasn't his napkin. It was her scarf on his
right.
lap. And he never told her.
Well, but, I mean, I don't think it's, I mean, sure, you can be nice, and I would probably do it, I don't know. But if I made the point of sitting next to Sharon on a flight and chose seats that I wanted, I don't think I should be the heel for it not working out for me.
No, but you could be the hero. Where are the heroes? Where are our airline heroes?
I was in 20D yesterday. That was where I was.
John, I just booked United Economy. I paid $16 each way to book an assigned seat. No carry-on allowed. This is just new to me. So,
oh, yeah, it's crazy.
So you book your seat, and this isn't Southwest, but then to be guaranteed to get the seat, they charge you $16
more? Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying.
Who thinks of this stuff?
And then there's no carry-on, right? So if you want to carry-on, you have to pay another fee.
I'm going to walk to Europe. John, I'm on a flight or two every week. It happens more often than you think. I always move for the young children. I'll insert, unlike some people we know. Though a couple of times I've had the parents say no thanks to move their teenager. No, you're good. You can have him. Don't worry, he's got the buds in, and he's not coming out of the coma until we land. It has gotten worse since the dreaded basic economy fares. People that don't travel often don't know about that. All right, here's another nuts and bolts every day. What's going on with this world conversation? Tracy Weiner's on the phone. Hi, Tracy. How are you?
Hi. Good morning, John.
Tracy posted on Facebook, you know, she was a longtime producer here and co-hosts the podcast called Apparently. All right. So, Trace, I do have what you wrote, but why don't you just give us your version of it? What's bugging you today?
So my daughter's going to be a freshman this fall, and so I started thinking about college and what it's like, because she's my oldest, so I don't know. But I decided to go back and look at where I went to school and look at the dorms, just totally curious, laying in my jammies one night, like, oh, I'm just going to look and see what it looks like. And I go to find out that down at University of Illinois, where I used to live, we called it the six-pack, the dorms are now differentiated by, quote, communities. So my dorm, Snyder Hall, is now substance-free, a substance-free dorm, which I thought all dorms were substance-free, but I guess in this 2020, that's not the case. But some dorms are leadership-focused, some are STEM-focused, and so on. And it just, I don't know why. I guess I sound like a boomer. I don't understand why everything has to be differentiated, because when I went to school, I had a roommate that listened to the Grateful Dead, that had incense, that was the absolute polar opposite of me, and we got along great and even went on to live with each other later outside of the dorms. And, like, I think I was richer for having somebody that I didn't really necessarily, I was in Greek life, she wasn't. Like, it was wonderful. So why are we differentiating so much so that's all my kid is going to know, is the people that are just like, that want to be leaders or are in healthcare or whatever.
I think when kids go away to school, it really is good if they go to someplace a little outside their comfort zone. Don't go with all the kids in your class and all your buddies to the same school and all stay in the same dorm or same fraternity, because then all you've changed is your address. You haven't changed your view, your experience.
Yeah, you're not learning to accept diversity or different ways of looking at things. I mean, that's why when you go on Facebook now, there's never a civil argument. You know, it's like, get off my lawn. You don't think like me. And my thread that I did on my page, like, all my friends were chiming in, like, oh, girl, we got to talk. Like, things are so different now. Kids keep their dorm doors closed in the hallways. No one hangs out at the residence halls in the cafeterias. They're all on their phones. When I was in school, everyone hung out in my room on 90210 night, and we all watched Beverly Hills 90210. It was like a community thing. Every single door was open, and if you were bored, you walked down the hall and you just popped into someone's room and sat down on their futon and hung out and talked. And it was sad to me to hear all that was changing.
Yeah, I don't have much to say about that, Trace. I mean, if that's really the thing, then I'm really sorry to hear that.
Well, when my kids went to school, in fact, Noah, one of them was, I think it was in Minnesota where they were doing it. And the idea was, if you are in a STEM education, a STEM area, it's nice to be around people who are also sharing those interests, can help with homework and things like that. I mean, it's,
well,
there are reasons for it.
At Carbondale, they had, I can think of two segregated, if you will, dorms. One was for foreign students, and that strikes me as a bad idea now that I think about that. Better we all integrate with them. The other one was for religious students who said that faith was important to them, and they put them. And then there was also a study, intense studies dorm or wing of a dorm. So that didn't seem to bother me that much, but also not many people opted for that. Mostly we were all just thrown into this dormitory blender and you just kind of roomed with whatever you got.
People calling me and telling me about how selection of your roommate is now. It's like going on Tinder and picking, like, you like swipe left or swipe right. I think what do they call it, like potluck or something? Like, I didn't know. I just said, just put me with anybody. Now it's even like more sophisticated than that.
Lots of texts about this, and you posted this on Facebook, right?
Yeah.
Okay, do you have another minute?
Sure.
Okay, I want to know what the response for you was. I'll tell you what it's been for me. And what do you say? The number is 312-981-7200. What do you think about this? Have you run into this? This is your chance to call or text. This is WGN.
Grainberry, Grainberry, healthy cereal for your family.
Hi, I'm Peter Harris for Grainberry Cereals. The world does not need another cereal unless it truly has something new and important to offer. I believe that Grainberry cereals can really make a difference in your life. I'm not a radio announcer. I just want to help you and your family live healthier, and I know Grainberry cereals can do that. Here's what makes Grainberry whole grain cereals so amazing. 1. Grainberry Onyx Sorghum contains more antioxidants to help protect you from all known free radical threats to your body. 2. Grainberry slows down sugar absorption and the digestion process. And 3. Grainberry contains less sugar than most cereals and tastes great. There's just no cereal like Grainberry.
Try Grainberry Honey Nut Toasted Oats, Multi-Bran Flakes, and Cinnamon Frosted Shredded Wheat, all with amazing Onyx Sorghum.
Grainberry, Grainberry.
Look for Grainberry at Shop and Save.
What is your Social Security strategy? Hi, Rick Edelman here, host of The Rick Edelman Show, right here every weekend. Choosing when to start taking Social Security is a key decision. Get it wrong, and you could miss out on tens of thousands of dollars over the course of your retirement. And just as important as that question is, Social Security is just one part of your overall retirement income plan. Equally important is figuring out how to generate income from your investments. How much can you withdraw so that you never run out of money? Let's get you a plan for all of this, and you can start right now. Just call 888-PLAN-RICK. And if you call right now until tonight at 10 p.m., we'll give you a free Social Security review plus a comprehensive retirement income review. Yes, both are free with no obligation. Just call 888-PLAN-RICK to schedule your appointment with one of my colleagues here at Edelman Financial Engines. 888-PLAN-RICK. That's 888-PLAN-RICK.
You see, Jussie Smollett has pleaded not guilty, so we'll have 6 more weeks of that nonsense, huh? The news coming up in 17 minutes. It's 10:43 on WGN. This is John Williams. Also, Demetrius Ivory is going to give us 60 seconds more on this weather that is coming. You might get 10 inches.
Yeah, and so another case we're watching, John, and there just has been a verdict returned in the Harvey Weinstein case, and it says he has been convicted. After sexual misconduct allegations against him fueled the whole Me Too movement. So Weinstein, you know, the jury had handed up a note last week that looked as if maybe there was some confusion. But it says here, the AP, Harvey Weinstein has been convicted at his trial. It's not clear if it's on every charge, but it looks as if perhaps it is. The jury's verdict followed 3 weeks of testimony that included counts of rape, forced sex, and more. So we'll have more on that coming up on 11 o'clock as well.
10:45, this is WGN. The U.S. Postal Service has issued a warning about email scams that claim to be from the Postmaster General. I don't know if you've seen these. One email notifies the recipient about a failed delivery attempt on a package. They say it's worth $100,000. Give us personal information before we deliver it. Another scam email asks for payment on unpaid online postage charges. The UPS does not email customers directly to demand money. I said UPS. It's the USPS, the U.S. Postal Service. It's important to understand how cybercrime affects you. Identity theft happens every 2 seconds, and you're missing stuff if you're just monitoring your credit. Now, there's this LifeLock out there, and I'm recommending that you contact them, and right now save 25% on your first year. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats, like social security numbers for sale on the dark web. No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions, but LifeLock sees threats you are missing. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year with the promo code LifeLock. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or go to LifeLock.com. Use the promo code LifeLock for 25% off. Demetrius, can you just give us a quick hit on the weather? Is it still lining up for about this time tomorrow?
Yeah, looking like a pretty good storm coming our way. Right now, winter storm watch has been issued basically for the entire viewing area. They go into effect west of Chicago into tonight, and for Cook County, in those areas, is going to be through Tuesday. We're expecting upwards of, in some areas, a foot of snow potentially. That's going to be mainly on the other side of the lake. I think in Chicago, we're looking at 3 to 6 or 4 to 8. I'm kind of fighting with myself as to which one to put out. The snow starts tomorrow afternoon, and the heaviest snow is going to be Tuesday night into early Wednesday. I expect Tuesday evening rush hour to be impacted, and really Wednesday morning rush hour is going to be very problematic.
Cold enough for the few days after that it's going to stick around, huh?
Yeah, we'll see highs in the mid-20s for, Thursday, Friday, and even into Saturday. We'll start off with a morning low temperature of about 13 and warm up to 38 in the afternoon, so it's not going anywhere.
Last thing, Demetrius, when's the first flake fly tomorrow, would you say?
Models are all over the place. Some show as early as 7 a.m. I think that it's not going to be until probably around 2 p.m. Hold me to it. If there's a snowflake at 2 p.m., I want to hear from somebody. I got 2 p.m. the snow. If it starts early, then go for the higher ends of the totals, which would be close to the 8 for Chicago. If it's not snow, if it's still raining tomorrow after lunchtime and by 2 p.m., I'd put us closer to the 3 to 4 inch range.
Demetrius Ivory over at Channel 9 WGN TV. Thanks, Demetrius.
Thanks.
It's 10:47 on WGN. Tracy Weiner, producer and blogger and podcaster, on a phone line, talking to us about her observations about the way kids are not segregated at the, segregated, not segregated. They're not integrated. They're segregated in college life these days by the dormitories. They put them in groups that are exactly like them. She thinks that's a shame. John, get used to this. It's unfortunately the world we live in now. Oh, my God, John, I don't have kids. I'm only 50, and I can't believe dorms are like that now. This is horrible. Kids have to be exposed to different types of people. John, 5 years ago, my daughter declared psychology as her major and was put into a dorm with others who had the same declaration. The very next semester, she changed her major and requested to move because she said, all of the psychology majors are crazy. She eventually found a non-crazy roommate for her final 3.5 years. Were you hearing stuff like that on your Facebook page, Trace?
Yeah, I actually heard a couple people that were in support of it. Some people were in awe, and other people chimed in from other universities out of state, saying that it's a learning community and it's fairly common now, practice.
Here's what it is. It's a marketing tool for schools to get your kids to sign up to go there. You know, I mean, they're competing in all these different ways. The food is different and all of that. And this is just another way where they create these communities. If it's a lead, so, you know, Tracy, you could be in a leadership community dorm and not like the Grateful Dead or have a roommate who likes music you don't like. I don't know that. I think you are going to have so many more important things to worry about by the time your freshman goes to college.
But I also think that it's this snowplow parent mentality. It's another thing for the parents to insert themselves into the lives of the kids to pave a clean path for them so that there's no unknowns. Everything, you know, we will fix everything in advance for the kids. To me, this is what it sounds like.
Well, that is absolutely true. All my friends that have older kids are all talking about the Facebook groups on for every college or university and the absolute insanity that that these parents are talking about on these pages about their kids and trying to mitigate
problems. I'm on one of those. It is crazy. I have a freshman daughter. Where should she go get her hair cut? And then other parents will give recommendations.
Wait a minute. This is... You guys are saying that the parents have their own Facebook groups?
The schools have Facebook parent groups.
Sure.
So, like, I'm on the Miami one, and so sometimes I will look at it just for kicks, but the things that they are talking about are my daughter needs to... Or my freshman son needs to get to Walmart at 10 a.m. Can someone help?
Oh, how about this? My freshman daughter's professor booked a exam on Wednesday before Thanksgiving. How can we, what dean or who do we talk to get that changed? Because it conflicts with our our vacation.
See, in all of those cases, I don't mind people wanting to know where to get a haircut or how to get to the store or how to change an exam. But like you said, Trace, I'd rather they knock on their door of their suite mate and say, hey, do you guys know what I can do? You know, network interpersonally.
Yes, have the actual college kid, you know, advocate for themselves and ask around to their friends, not because if I told my daughter where to go get her haircut, she'd go to the exact opposite place.
Believe me, I suspect that the students have no idea what's going on this page. And they would be mortified by it.
But I also suspect that the parents are saying, hey, there's a good place where you can get a decent haircut at the mall, and here's the address.
Sure.
I guess there's no harm in that, but the kids want nothing to do with this, you're hoping, right, Steve?
Well, I think a lot of it's embarrassing. You know, my 21-year-old.
Exactly. Think about the age of these kids and how responsible you had to be when you were their age, how much stuff you got done and got done wrong on your own. By the way, I just, once again, I know this is a very boomer conversation, but there it is. It doesn't make it wrong. Ed, what did you want to say? You're on WGN.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, you know, say how bad it is. If these are all taking the same subject, they're not all white, so they'll diversify. So they're getting that experience. Plus, later on, when they go out to get a job, they're already forming their people that they can go to get jobs and to get help. But, I mean, it almost sounds like in the rooms, it's just all black, all white, all Spanish, all Protestant, Catholic, Jews, and so forth. Which, if those, as long as they still mix different races, they're getting some experience.
Well, I think that's what Steve was trying to say, too, that just because you have a similar interest doesn't mean you won't have other dissimilarities. Ed, I'm going to go from you to Kathy. What did you want to say, Kathy? You're on the air.
Yes, I just wanted to say, I when my son was in college, I remember we just talked to him like once a week. He had just bought himself a cell phone. You know, just the difference, and he's 35, so it's not that long ago, but things were way different. I have a friend whose daughter has more recently been in college. She talked to her every single day. And, you know, she talked to her friends who decided to stay home every day. So you're not living in the moment.
I'm going from Kathy to Tom. Thank you, Kathy. Tom, it's your turn. You're on WGN. Hi, Tom.
Hey, John. Thanks for taking my call. Just since we're on the college, talking about college stuff, does anybody have a good place or where to go to get information about borrowing to pay for this expensive adventure that I'm going to be taking on in the fall?
Are you setting me up here? Do you not know the answer to that?
Well, I've been asking, and no one can give me a good answer.
Seriously, so you are trying to borrow the money to send your kid to college?
Well, I'm going to have to borrow some because, unfortunately, I can't afford it all.
Oh, no, listen, yes. Trust me, nobody can. I've been out of that game for a very long time myself. The only advice I've been given lately is that you should, I mean, this is that Ray, you know that commercial we do for the lady, Ray
yes.
Kaplan? Okay,
yep.
So she helps people who have college debt, and she says one smart thing you can do before you incur college debt, and you will, that's okay, is to borrow it from the right places and to have the right person borrow it. So if you and your wife both have income, or if just one of you has income, make sure the person borrowing the money is the person with the least income. Just put one name on it. Number two, borrow from a federal source before you go to the private market. Those loans are more forgivable. You have more options for debt forgiveness if you borrow from federal sources rather than private sources.
So a federal source be through the school?
I don't know the answer to that.
Oh, okay.
Here. Do me this favor. Would you just call Ray? I know.
Yes.
And just tell her I said hi. And just say, what does that even mean? Because John said a federally funded source. And I don't even know what that is now. But
all right, I'll do that.
Yeah, her number is 312-294-8989.
8989.
Affirmative.
294. Thank you, John. I'm a caller.
All right. Tell her we said hi, Tom. I'm sorry I couldn't be of more specific help. Tracy, any thoughts on all of that?
Hey, man, if I knew how to do it, I'd be writing a book about it, and there's lots of books about it. So
Elif had a funny story, by the way, about somebody famous showing up at her dorm room.
Yeah, I can't believe that I met this person in college and sort of like hung out with them a lot in my apartment, in my dorm apartment. It was a dorm. I had a roommate who grew up on the South Side. I never got to pick my roommates, and she was younger than me by a year or two. And I grew up in LaGrange, went to Lyons Township High School. She went to Jones College Prep. And long story short, I knew of this rapper who wasn't famous yet. He's famous now, but I thought he was cool because I would see him perform with this band in town that I liked. And one day I got a knock on the door, on my bedroom door, and this rapper said, "Hey, I'm Chance. I heard that you wanted to meet me."
How many years ago was that?
I want to say 7.
So he was 18 at the time?
Just about. Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Chance the rapper, she's right here. Swing on by anytime. I'm out of time. Tracy, interesting conversation. You always shoot us some fun topics. I appreciate you saying hi today.
Hey, thanks for talking.
How do I get in touch with Knox's president? I need to speak to her directly. Lots of you are texting us examples of what you are seeing about snowplow parents trying to make the world better for their kids away in college. Hiking John, this college situation is a direct result of those parents who organized play dates instead of letting their kids play on their own. The helicopters are still hovering. John, my friend and I compete to find the most helicopter posts at our kids' colleges. The other thing is college students, somebody else pointed out, don't use Facebook. The kids don't use Facebook. They're on Instagram. They're on Snapchat. Only the boomers are using Facebook.
No, this is all parents, yeah.
Yeah, so the boomers are on Facebook. John, I'm currently listening while working in an accounting office. I'm doing tax returns. These same snowplow parents are now dropping off their 2, 3, and 4 adult employed kids, some of whom are married's W-2 forms, and personal financial paperwork to get their taxes prepared for them. This is for Steve Bertrand. Who do you talk to about financial aid for college and if our son should not have any savings account so he could get more financial aid? I've seen that question before, and, you know, it's time we maybe answer those kinds of questions. We'll round up a guest and give you ample warning about that sort of thing later this week. What's the best way to borrow the money? We often talk about how to get out of debt. Let's do you the favor of saying how can you best manage it going in? So stick around WGN Radio middays for that. I'm looking at the CNN screen. Weinstein found guilty on 2 of 5 counts, criminal sex act, third degree rape. You read the articles about this. Some of those words you don't even want to say on the radio. The testimony has been graphic. I also just don't know what to do of the image of this old man hunched over in a walker. I don't know if I'm being played or if that's really how bad his back is. He says he's had back surgery, right? And he needs the walker to walk. Is he playing that up, or is that legitimate? I guess it really doesn't matter at the end of the day. The jurors passed their judgment, but it was seen as a sympathy appeal on his part so that maybe they'd give him a break. Steve, is the reporting on the Weinstein verdict...
Well, the predatory count, those two counts were the most serious ones.
Yeah.
And he was found not guilty of those two.
So
that could have sent him to prison for the rest of his life.
Yeah, imagine that. I mean, really, every article about him says he's the guy that got this whole hashtag MeToo movement going. There were so many names that were rolling out so fast then, right?
Right, dropping like flies.
I know, it was just amazing, and now that's sort of dropped off, and I don't know if that's because all of the worst behavior, people have been outed and have left, they've been fired, they quit, whatever, or if it's just still going on, but we've moved on to something else now. I don't know where we are on that.
I think there's probably a little of both of that.
Yeah.
The most serious charge he faced today was convicted for... the most serious charge he was convicted for today, I should say, holds a sentence of max of 25 years. But that's the maximum.
Rich Lenkoff is the Legal Face-Off host on WGN Radio. He's with Bryce Downey and Lenkoff. Rich is online. Elif said, I thought he was ready to go. And he is or is not. That's him on line 7. Hey, Rich, it's John. You're on WGN. How are you?
Hey, John. Good. How are you?
Really good. What's your first observation about the Weinstein verdict?
Well, mixed verdict for sure, but still a victory for the prosecution. You know, he was convicted of two very serious charges, felonies, which will carry with them significant jail time. So while I'm sure the prosecution is a little disappointed that they didn't get him on the most serious counts, it's still a victory considering how difficult the case was.
What did I see? There was like first, second, and third degree criminal sexual assault or rape. I didn't know that rapes were categorized by one, two, or three criminality levels. Can you shed a little light on that?
Yeah, I mean, he was convicted of first-degree criminal sexual act, which relates to the Annabella Sciorra allegation. You know, that was a difficult one. The third-degree rape relates to the actress that alleged that even though they had a relationship, that he still raped her. So the takeaway on that is that even though one of the difficulties of the case, John, is that we hear testimony from the actress about all of the relationships, you know, the relationship they had even after the rape, and the defense was going after her on that point, alleging that there's no way she could have been raped, that the sex must have been consensual because of all the texts and messages she was sending to him. This is a victory for the prosecution on that, because it proves that even though she was having these this relationship with him, that it was still rape, which was a really significant point that the prosecution was trying to make.
Is there a statute of limitations on those kind of charges?
Yeah, there is. There's a 30-year statute of limitation. There's a 30-year statute of limitation. The prosecution was, again, going with the Bill Cosby theory, which was that even though the statute of limitations has passed, they were trying to prove a modus operandi, that this was part of his scheme of, you know, going after women in a certain way. That's the exception to the statute of limitations. But yeah, the statute of limitations did pass on a lot of the allegations, including the one made by actress Annabella Sciorra.
I'm surprised there weren't more. I mean, this was just two women that we're talking about here, and other women testified. But I wonder how many people could have actually brought charges against him.
Yeah, we certainly heard from, you know, a lot of other actresses and other women who have come into, you know, Weinstein's life over the years who have alleged similar conduct. But like in the Bill Cosby case, like in other cases, the statute of limitations did run. But again, the exception, as we saw in Pennsylvania with the Cosby case, is if the prosecution can prove, as they did in that case, that this is not just one individual act that's part of a, you know, criminal pattern. That's why that testimony was let in.
It's I think it's rare that you have watershed moments like this where there was an elephant in the room, nobody said anything, and then all of a sudden everybody says everything, and then the dam bursts on a whole bunch of men, and a whole bunch of women came forward, and Steve and I were talking, Rich, that tide seems to have, you know, gone back out now. We aren't hearing as much about that, but it really, he was the first domino, wasn't he?
He was, and obviously, as you point out, we've seen many celebrities, actors, athletes, you know, with allegations against them, but I think you're correct. We've talked about this extensively on our show. The pendulum has swung a little bit back towards giving the accused the presumption of innocence, which they are afforded by the law, of course, rather than, you know, just jump to the conclusion that they are guilty. But it's tricky, right? You obviously want to believe, you know, sexual assault and rape victims, and you understand why it takes so long for them frequently to come forward. But on the other hand, you want to give every defendant the presumption of innocence that they are afforded by the law. And I think you're right. I think right now, rather than convict everyone in the court of public opinion, defendants are given at least, you know, their right to face their accusers and get these charges heard before a jury.
But I can't think of any cases, you know, the Bill O'Reillys and the Bill Cosbys and the Matt Lauers and the list goes on. I can't think of many instances where, in fact, we said, aha, see, there's proof that guy wasn't guilty of anything and that the accuser was just after money or revenge or something. It seems like most of these cases have, if not credibility, at least we don't have the opposite. That is, it proved that nothing happened or that was consensual. You know what I mean? I mean, we've had ample opportunity here for that, and I don't recall any instances where they say, well, what do you know? Matt Lauer didn't do anything wrong, or what do you know? Yeah. Harvey Weinstein was innocent.
I want to get Rich's response to what's just happening now in court, and that is that he has been remanded to custody. So you talked about the back surgery and whether that would get him sympathy or things like that. He's being taken directly into custody and will be sentenced now March 11th.
Yeah, not unexpected. I mean, you know, again, these are serious charges, serious convictions now, I should say, that carry with them significant jail time, anywhere from 4 to 25 years, much less than had he been convicted of the more serious charges, some of which carry life sentences. But to your point, the reason he's being remanded is because these are serious charges, number one. You know, maybe if it was a couple years that he possibly faces, he would be let go until he is sentenced. But these are serious charges, number one. Number two, he is a flight risk. He has all, you know, obviously millions of dollars worth of resources. There was talk during the trial of him, you know, tampering with his ankle bracelet. So I think the judge, it's not surprising the judge is remanding him and putting him right to prison. I mean, he will be in prison today and until he's sentenced. And then, again, you could expect anywhere from the charges carry prison sentences between 4 and 25 years.
So this is from the Oscars 2013, I think. Seth MacFarlane is up there, and he makes a joke about the Best Supporting Actress nominees. Producer Elif, do you have that soundbite? This is the Best Supporting Actress nominees. It's Seth MacFarlane at the 2013 Oscars.
Congratulations, you five ladies no longer have to pretend to be attracted to Harvey Weinstein.
Hard to read that response from the crowd. But I guess everybody kind of knew and nobody was really saying anything. I mean, it falls into maybe Weinstein's defense. Do I understand correctly? He was kind of saying, well, that's Hollywood. And he was no different than anybody else. Would you comment at all, Rich, on the way he defended himself or how much of this he copped to?
Yeah, in this particular case, I mean, he has said things like that, I think, earlier on. In this case, his defense, who, by the way, the defense attorney, Donna Martunas from Chicago, excellent lawyer, did a really strong job. And her defense was that this was consensual. I think she was going for all or nothing. And again, part of the defense strategy was the release of a lot of evidence from at least one of the actresses where she repeatedly said, I appreciate you. I love you. This was all after the alleged, well, now, you know,
proven,
now proven, exactly, rape. So the point was, yes, they had sex, but it was consensual. And the big contention point in this case, or at least one of them, was whether you can believe someone who says she was raped, who then goes on to have a relationship with Harvey Weinstein, and, you know, flaunts it and brags about it to her friends and family over many occasions. And the answer was yes. Obviously, the jury felt that even though, you know, she had this, that she may have been suffering from some condition that is not uncommon to rape victims. You know, there was expert testimony about it's not uncommon for sexual assault and rape victims to continue relationships with their rapists.
I'm glad that you pointed that out, because I thought just because those women said that after the fact doesn't mean it didn't happen. And this attorney that's been defending Weinstein, my understanding is she gave an interview. I haven't read the interview, but she gave an interview to one publication. Was it The Atlantic or someone? And she said she has never been raped or sexually assaulted because she never put herself in a position where that could happen. Wow. What a dumb thing for her to say. But she's on the record as saying that, too. I don't know if you have a reaction to that, Rich.
Yeah, very tough statement, obviously. And she was criticized, as she should have been, I think. I agree with you. You know, rape is not a sexual crime. It's not something that you put yourself into. So, yeah, for her to say that I've never been in that position because, you know, I don't travel in those circles or I'm more careful, I think really, you know, belittles the experience that sexual assault and rape victims have. And most, you know, on another point, was just not a smart thing to say as the attorney for one of the most high-profile, you know, people accused in this whole movement. So, yeah, not something that was the right thing to say by any stretch.
Linda, you're on WGN Radio. Rich Lenkoff's on the phone line, too. Linda, what do you want to say?
Yeah, you were saying that you don't recall of anybody who was a woman who accused a celebrity of sexual assault and found out later that it wasn't true. A few years ago, probably 4 or 5 years ago, Patrick King was accused by a young woman, like 19, I believe it was, and it came out that that was all a hoax, that it was not true.
Yeah, so. Obviously I hadn't thought of that one. Linda, thank you for the call. Yeah. And
yep. Okay.
that was pre-Me Too, too, but I'll take your point. Scott, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? Scott, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you? I'm a frequent listener from Milwaukee, Scott Winkler. I'm a criminal defense lawyer, and I just had the trial of my life up here with a young African-American man and a white accuser of sexual assault, 2 counts, strangulation charge, 1 count, and it went to jury after 1 year of putting him through hell. He was not guilty on all counts because there was a prior history of consensual relations, which she allegedly revoked on the night in question. And the jury found she didn't revoke it. She said that she didn't come off as credible. Her story was really very, very easy to pick apart. And so it's rare. I grant you, it's very rare. Let's say 5-10% of the cases. But when you get put on the hot seat, your life is in the hands of a jury. And it is, let me tell you, it is really quite terrifying for the client, and we got him not guilty on all counts. So it does happen.
But to be clear then, so this couple were a couple. They were having sex all these years. Now she doesn't either want to be a couple. She sure doesn't want to have sex this night. And she says no, and they still have sex, right? And so the question is that rape? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, but the question is, even if she did say no, it's not clear even that she did say no. My client, it's not always the case. Mr. Weinstein, for example, did not testify. That's his right. And most defendants in these high-profile cases do not testify. My client testified, and he said none of what she said is true. And he was a credible young man. He didn't hear any no's. She didn't say no. She didn't oppose him at any point in the evening.
Yeah,
it was not clear whether she wanted revenge. It may be that she saw signs he had another girlfriend, and she learned about it after the fact, and that set her off. But
the jury returned in his favor. You're saying,
all right, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
fully
yeah.
In his favor, exonerating him.
Interesting story.
Yes, he broke down. He broke down crying on my shoulder when the jury read its verdict because he was. Try to empathize with a guy going through that for a whole year.
His life's right? In his hands at that moment. Thanks for the call, Scott. Interesting story.
Thank you.
Rich Lenkoff's on a phone line. You hear Rich on WGN Radio often. He's also the co-host of Legal Face Off, a podcast we host at WGN. He's with Bryce Downey and Lenkoff, LLC. Rich, anything else you want to add to the Weinstein guilty on 2 of 5 counts? You want to predict what the sentencing will be like?
I think it's going to be serious. I mean, we're watching right now Cyrus Vance, who's the district attorney in Manhattan, speak. Obviously, you know, the message component of this is very important, especially, as you mentioned, Weinstein was the real first face of the Me Too movement. I think the idea of sending a message is important. You know, part of sentencing is always what deterrent effect it has on other potential, you know, criminals. Of course, the counter to that is in the Blagojevich case that we see rampant examples of corruption continuing in Illinois, even after Judge Zagel handed out a record sentence of 14 years in Blagojevich.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, that's for another discussion, the degree to which these sentences have deterrent effects, but that's certainly something that will motivate the judge, I think, in this case.
The Mincing Rascals podcast that we do spent some time talking about if throwing these guys in jail for a long time doesn't do the trick, what will? And they actually had some interesting ideas about that, but you're right, that's a conversation for another day. Rich, you and I will be busy sometime soon. Let's talk about this some more. I appreciate you joining us.
Thanks, John.
That's Rich Lankoff.
Come back to Chicago.
To Chicago.
Chicago.
Drove to Chicago.
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 Shy City. Shy City.
I'm coming home again.
Thank you, Chance. 11:34. All right, Thomas in Oak Forest. Where are you right now, Thomas? What are you doing, by the way?
I'm on 294, mile marker 10, if you know where that's at.
I do not, but I know where 294 is.
That's right up by Gurnee, right?
Right by Cicero Avenue. By Cicero Avenue.
Had the complete opposite wrong direction.
Yeah, worth a shot. What do you do for a living? What are you doing driving around on 294?
I'm a truck driver. I haul chemicals.
Well, you got chemicals behind you. Be careful. Be safe. You can do two things at once here, can you?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm empty.
Let's see how well. Me too. I got 10 questions about how much things cost. In part because I was reading and saw what an Illinois legislator makes. Does the average Illinois legislator's starting salary? Is it $47,000, $67,000, or $87,000? What's the starting average salary for an Illinois lawmaker?
I'm going to say the $80,000.
$87,000 is wrong. It's $67,000.
It's not bad for a part-time job.
I thought they made more, to be honest with you. You know who gets paid pretty well? Our governor. What is the governor's salary? Is it $177,000, $200,000, or
$224,000? I'm going to have to say the highest number.
$224,000 is wrong. It's $177,000, but by governor's salary standards, a lot of them make under $100,000. That's still a lot of money to you and me, but we aren't governor. I thought the governor made more than $177,000. Lately, we elect governors that give it back anyway. They don't need it. With you.
They buy a campaign commercial with it.
Oh, my gosh. In fact, not only did J.B. Pritzker agree that he would, you know, agree, he just volunteered that he would not take a salary, but he would take his own personal finances and double the salary of his upper staff. So he's actually paying a lot of money to be governor of Illinois. Speaking of governors and the amount of money they do or don't make, former Illinois Democratic Governor Rod Blagojevich and his wife, this came up at their trial, famously spent the Blago was in office. He and his wife spent $400,000 on A, clothes, B, cars, or C, entertaining.
C, entertaining.
Entertaining is wrong. They spent it on clothes.
So it turns out you can't do two things at once.
Wow, I'm getting killed here.
It's all right.
I'm getting killed.
Yeah, it's okay. You're busy driving a tanker truck. I'd rather you be good on the road and bad on the quiz. $400,000 they spent on clothes, according to the IRS. In fact, Politico reported that on two separate occasions, according to an IRS agent, Blago spent $1,300 on what? It's an item of clothing. On two separate occasions, he spent $1,300 on what? Item of clothing. It's not a suit.
It's cufflinks.
I like that guess. It's ties. He spent $1,300 buying 10 ties on two separate occasions. So $130 for a tie times 10. I would have a sick feeling in my stomach if I spent $1,300 on ties, especially if I was only making $170,000 a year. They were not rich, but they spent like they were rich. You know, Steve, we were talking about that in the podcast. What motivated the Blagojeviches, or at least Rod? Why did he do all that crazy stuff? And it's because that guy wanted and needed a lifestyle that he couldn't afford. You can put him on the couch, talk to him all you want, but at the end of the day, he spent like, and he wanted to live like, something he was not.
But he wasn't taking the money, right? He wasn't convicted for taking money.
He was not convicted for taking money. But you see, they had like what was it, 8 or 9 credit cards. And they would use one credit card to pay off another credit card. They took a loan against their houses. They had a $500,000 place in Washington, D.C. Their house in Ravenswood Manor is valued at over $1 million, I believe. Some of that work was done for free, but they had some money in their houses, but they just could not live the lifestyle, it seems, that they wanted to. How about this one for you? How much money does the Illinois Tollway take in every day? $1 million, $2 million, or $4 million? How much money does the Illinois Toll make every day? $1, $2, or $4 million, Thomas?
I'm going to ask for a lifeline.
Atta boy. Atta boy.
Yikes. Thank you. I'm going to say... I can't do two things
at once
either.
Thomas
right,
feels.
I know. I'm going to go with the $4 million.
He says $4 million. You want to go with that?
Yes.
Correct answer is $4 million.
Nice.
How about this one? Richest city in Illinois with an average income of $209,000. Is it Glencoe? Is it Winnetka? Or is it Oak Brook? Highest average salary is in Glencoe, Winnetka, or Oak Brook. Which one is it, Thomas?
I'm going to say Winnetka.
Winnetka's wrong. Lapka, you want to take a shot at that?
I would have said Oak Brook.
Oak Brook. 0-for-2. Bertrand, you want to guess Glencoe?
I'll go Glencoe.
Steve is right. It's Glencoe.
I would have thought with all the big businesses in Oak Brook for sure.
Yeah, I was thinking of that. There is a moneyed class in Oak Brook. They said one of the reasons the Glencoe is so rich is because it has a lot of lakefront property, and lakefront properties are more valuable than even fancy homes or fancier homes that aren't on the lake.
Or polo ponies, too.
Really? They got polo ponies up there?
In Oak Brook, yeah.
Oh, in Oak Brook, yes, they do. That's right. Let's do one more here. How about this? The least expensive one-way Metra ticket. If you're going to ride the trains around the suburbs, you get on there. There's discounts for seniors and students, but the general fare for an adult least expensive ride is $2.50, $3.50, or $4. What's the least expensive ride one way on Metra?
Do I have any lifelines left?
Yeah, you can ask them all. What do you guys
think? I have no idea. Yes. I have no idea.
I'm sorry, John. What were the numbers?
The correct answer is $4 is the least expensive now one-way ride on Metra. It's more than I remember it. The bus fare is $2.25. The train is $2.50. If you ride the CTA, by the way, that's the one-way prices. But $4 rather, is the least expensive on Metra. Hey, listen, you've done really well on our quiz today, Thomas.
Oh, my God, don't patronize me. How dare you?
I appreciate your listening, and you're still going to get the Mega Pros hoodie. I want you to wear it proudly, okay?
I appreciate it. I still think Harvey Weinstein, P-I-G.
Yeah, what an awful P-I-G. Person. Isn't that terrible?
Yes, absolutely.
Now, you drive safely. Talk to producer Elif off the air, okay?
Thank you.
All right, Thomas. There he goes. Driving a truck, doing the good work. 1145 WGN. One last call about that last topic. Gene wanted to say something. Gene, what can we do for you? You're on the air.
I got a... I was curious if they had access to therapy in prison, that his personality is the same as it was when he went. Maybe he should have had some therapy or counseling to kind of get the thing under control. He's the same person he was. He doesn't act any different. He doesn't talk any different.
It's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. I know that guys who don't have work, they try and give them occupational skills, teach them how to fill out a resume and apply for a job. Blagojevich doesn't need any of that. He just needs somebody to fix his brain, and I don't know if they do that sort of thing. That's a good question, though. Somebody, and Lord knows he's doing a lot of interviews these days, should ask if he undergoes any sort of therapy or counseling.
It'd be great. I'd sure love to know it, just to know it.
Thanks for the question. Thanks for the call.
You bet. Thanks.
This is from the Tribune back in 2010. IRS agent Sherry Schindler is continuing to peel back the curtain of the Blagojevich family's personal finances. Apparently, they like to spend, spend, spend. Schindler reviewed the financial records of Blagojevich during his time as governor and said that he and his wife spent more than $400,000 on clothes during that time frame, more than they spent on the mortgage for his Northside home. Blagojevich dropped $205,706 alone with Oxford, a tailor with a reputation for sewing high-end custom suits. On one day alone in December of 2006, Blagojevich charged $20,000 with the suit maker, his credit card records showed. You know, if you're Donald Trump or J.B. Pritzker, you can spend all the money you want on anything you want. If you're making $170,000, you're not rich, and you don't have the money, then this is like a giant red flag. In another month, Blagojevich charged $12,000 on clothes, $81 on toys. As Schindler gave an overview of the family's spending habits, she noted that the expenditures over the six-year time frame did not reflect any money spent on personal vehicles. Blagojevich and his family relied on state cars and drivers to ferry them everywhere. Schindler also said Blagojevich spent nothing out of his pocket for legal bills. Those expenses associated with the mounting federal investigations were covered by his campaign account. They drained a couple $1 million from that. And the list goes on. It says here, credit card statements entered into evidence by prosecutors showed Blagojevich or his wife on many occasions charged thousands of dollars at a time with high-end clothiers or shoe stores. They also later returned many of those items. In January 2005, for example, more than $12,000 worth of clothing was returned to Saks Fifth Avenue. Different story now. We mentioned that last year there was this conversation about at Millennium Park, you'll sometimes see people handing out, actually you won't, now that I think about that, see people proselytizing, evangelizing, handing out tracts and flyers because I think it's against the law. There was a group of young men, though, that would come from Wheaton College downtown, and they would hang out at Millennium Park, and they wouldn't bother anybody, but they would be there. Well, let's let Gabe explain exactly what they were doing. Gabe Emerson's on the phone. Gabe, welcome back. You're on WGN again. How are you?
Hello, I'm well. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us. I'm trying to recollect. You were on with us last time, and tell us what it was that you guys would do when you would go to Millennium Park.
Yes, sir. So when we went to Millennium Park, I think it was, this all started back in, last fall is when the court case kind of started. But when we were in Millennium Park, we would hand things to people, start conversations. Sometimes we would use our voices to proclaim our message. We would never use really any like amplifiers or anything like that, though. We weren't really offending anyone. We were just kind of talking about what we really believe to be a very important message, which is the gospel of Jesus Christ. And the park kind of didn't like that. They told us that was against the law. We were just kind of very confused, and so we kind of started a litigation process that's just finally coming to closure right around now.
What is the closure? What's happened?
So I'm not a legal professional, but the way the lawyers explained it is that there's been the preliminary injunction was granted by the judge, and so what that basically means is that we can go back into Millennium Park now, or anyone who wants to kind of get signatures for political things, they can now do that, which is amazing. And it's a great free speech thing. The reason it took so long was because the judge ended up writing a 30-plus page opinion on why we are, in effect, still allowed to do this based on our constitutional right. Lawyer said that was a very good thing.
Your lawyer said that was a very good thing. And I presume you say that's a very good thing, too. This from the Chicago Tribune. The ruling comes 6 months after a group of Wheaton College students filed a lawsuit against the city saying Millennium Park rules unconstitutionally restricted their freedom of speech and their free exercise of religion in a public space. You wouldn't use an amplifier, you say, or a bullhorn, but you said you would use your voices. So if I was walking by you, what would I hear?
So you would probably hear us somewhere in our conversation about how we are all incapable of earning God's love, and we are all incapable of earning a relationship with God.
and we are all, we've all missed the mark in some way or shape or form.
I understand that.
Because of that.
And more specifically, Gabe, this is my question, though, although I want to appreciate your message. But would you just be shouting that out to the crowd generally, or would you come up to me and say, hey, you know, we're all sinners and we need to right our ships? Or would you speak to me specifically?
Yeah.
Or come up to me?
That's a beautiful thing. We usually go in groups. Like sometimes the groups are just two or three. Sometimes the groups are five or six. And if there is one person speaking louder than others, we usually have other people talking to people, like face-to-face. We really like to get face-to-face interaction and kind of have conversation because we want to understand what other people think as well.
Okay, but react to this then, Gabe. So I just want to go see the Bean. I'm just going to Millennium Park, and you come up to me and say, hey, fella, what about this? And I say, sorry, I'm not interested. Then what happens?
Yeah, so I probably would say, okay, that's fine. I wouldn't keep talking to you personally. But if one of the people with us was like proclaiming their voice, they wouldn't stop that. But I would stop my conversation with you. I would respect your boundaries.
Yeah.
I would say that I'm
So the judge has, as you said, it's a temporary injunction barring the city from restricting your free speech privileges. I don't think this is the end of this, though. It's a temporary injunction.
Yes.
Yeah, so maybe it'll go the other way, but so far they've ruled in your favor. So now, will you guys be back out there again? Are you out there? Do you go there now, or are you going to wait until it gets warmer?
Yeah, so we were actually there on last Friday night, and we will be there again this Friday night. If anyone would love to come and hear our message, we would love to chat with you on Friday night.
You know, a friend of mine said hard to take issue with you guys because you seem reasonable and it sounds like you're trying to respect people's space. But what about the next guy and the next guy and the next guy? And it's a very popular place and it is free.
Yeah.
It is free of all of this stuff. It's just a fun, relaxing, touristy thing. But if it becomes a sort of bug house square where we've got people on soapboxes and we've got people with megahorns and we've got people bugging us left and right, I run into enough of that at my L stop. I would like it if I didn't have to go through that at Millennium Park. You're going to change the nature of some of these public spaces. I don't know what your reaction to that is, but that's the concern that people have, Gabe.
Yeah, no, I very much respect the concern. I think I would have that kind of same concern as well. But then also, like, the judge has ruled that it as it stands right now, and it may change. It is like against the Constitution for the city to make that rule. So like it's those people's constitutional right to say whatever, to like say things and whatnot in the park. So I mean maybe we get offended, maybe we don't, but I think at the end of the day, it's more important to uphold our Constitution than it is to make sure we're not hurting anyone's feelings.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with that, except that one can, right? You can't say anything anywhere. Famously, you can't say fire in a crowded theater. And
that's true. Yeah, you're right.
No solicitation zones. There are places where we say, okay, but you can't do that kind of speech here.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the judge has said maybe this sort of religious speech is okay at Millennium Park. But I guess I wish I knew what it was going to be like. I want a time travel machine, Gabe. I want to go a year or two forward and see if it's really disruptive now or not. And then maybe that'll help me form an opinion today.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I really do hope and pray that it doesn't become disruptive to the general public. Because I was looking at like a list of America's top attractions. And, I mean, the Bean made the list of like the top 10 or top 20.
Yeah.
So it is a very like popular place, and I really hope and pray that it doesn't become like just a pre-show. But I do hope that people are able to hear our message and hear other messages because of this hearing.
Gabe Emerson is a student at Wheaton College. What's your major, Gabe?
Business.
Business.
Planning on going into accounting.
And where do I recall? Weren't you from downstate or St. Louis, something like that?
Yes, sir. I'm from St. Louis. Good memory.
Yeah, yeah. I don't have a good memory, but I do remember that. And I remember liking you. I remember being very impressed with you. I also remember
being
a little sad for you guys because I see people doing what you do sometimes and people passing judgment on them. It strikes me as not a fun way to spend an afternoon. And there you guys were, at least having your convictions out front and center. Gabe, listen, I'll visit with you again down the road. Thanks for your time today, and good luck to you when you go to Millennium Park.
Yes, thank you very much. Have a great day.
That's Gabe Emerson, Wheaton College student. G. Suki's down the hall getting ready for the business lunch. Steve will do the news after that. What are you going to start with today, G?
Well, we're going to talk a bit about the markets and what's going on.
Yeesh. Yeah, what is it? We were at 1,000.
Yeah, I think it's now 950.
Man.
Yeah. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about what makes up your credit score. And then we're also going to be talking about new innovations and startups. Have you ever done ClassPass, John?
I don't know what that is.
Oh, okay. Do you work out a lot?
Can't you tell?
I thought so.
No, I don't.
Oh, I thought you did.
ClassPass.
Yes, it's a way for you to try out a bunch of different types.
What a good idea.
Right. Yes, but there's a local competitor to ClassPass.
Wow.
Yes, so okay. I'm going to tell you about that.
All coming up.